You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses.
Welcome back. Great song. All right, y'all. Captain Cody Rubner here. Tuesday, January 13th, about 3:49 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I am hopping on with my friend and fisheries confidant, Tony Friedrich, because Tony was on a meeting that while I was involved with helping promote and get people to attend, had some personal stuff pop up and could not get on. So we chopped it up this morning, and I got the full recap, obviously live texts from everyone involved, as well as a couple downloads from different participants this morning. And I figured we should hop on the podcast and talk about it for a couple minutes so that everyone else can hear what went down. If you are not aware, last night, Rhode Island's Division of Marine Fisheries had one of their workshops, and one of the topics on that workshop was the management of false albacore and bonito. Atlantic bonito. Any Florida or Southern boys and girls listening, this is not bonita, false albacore. You probably think that's the same thing, but no, this is Atlantic bonito, the little speedsters, little dragons ripping around, and those ones are a little bit tastier. Well, actually, a lot of bit tastier than false albacore, but important fish, important fisheries, especially to New England, North Carolina, and underestimated in their importance to Florida, at least for false albacore. We have been doing a lot of research on them over the last three, four, five plus years, thousands of dollars invested and hours of brain power and working with great scientists and researchers and economists, all the like. We have seen two states take unprecedented first steps to lay a framework for other states to follow about precautionary management. For those who have never heard that term, we're talking about, hey, let's do something in the regulatory fashion that protects this resource so it never hits rock bottom. Things aren't bad right now, but let's never get to rock bottom. And that's a profound change from what we normally see, which is reactionary, which is, oh shit, there's zero left, now what do we do? So in the spirit of precautionary management, Massachusetts and North Carolina have taken leaps to establish the first guardrail management for false albacore, with Massachusetts Atlantic bonito were lumped in under an aggregate sum for management. And last night there was a meeting in Rhode Island, just over the border, a lot of the same fish and fishermen participating from that Massachusetts. So a lot of ties and connections there. Sometimes some of these captains are fishing both states waters within the same trip. And there was a discussion about mirroring or matching or some version of something close for management for those two species. So Tony was on site, gave a comment. Well, he wasn't on site. He was on Zoom, excuse me, gave a comment. And a lot of our community did the same, whether in person or on Zoom. So Tony, why don't you walk us through, how did Rhode Island's meeting go last night? Why don't you just give us maybe the general overview, and then maybe we'll chop it up on a couple specific comments or takeaways that people should be aware of that happened. And then the final thing is we'll just say where this is going and what's next.
Yeah. So this was all put into motion at the request of Peter at Saltwater Edge, who obviously our chairman, as well as the Rhode Island Saltwater Sportsmen's Association, who, you know, over the years has proven to be a really good partner. Their conservation ethic really lines up with ours, and just, you know, a great group of people to work with. We decided to team up, and, you know, look, this is just natural. You know, Massachusetts adopts these regulations. Rhode Island and Massachusetts share so much water, and there were issues that Massachusetts was addressing, like management issues, when they put these regulations into place, and those same problems are going to manifest in Rhode Island, and we can get into that in a second. So it's again, it's just the natural progression of things. These are, you know, two states that where, you know, where that state line is, the water does not know that state line, and they just share so much productive coastline, and it's kind of the natural thing to do. And there's a long history with Rhode Island and Massachusetts doing, you know, conservation things together. And probably the most recent was the blackfish to tog management, where they're doing their best to protect the real giant fish. You know, both states have a stellar world-class tog fishery. And again, this is pretty recent. So the letter was sent. The state agency in Rhode Island had a workshop last night. And part of that workshop is going through any potential changes. You know, they went over the regulations on how to measure a striped bass. You know, they're trying to standardize that, and you know, changes with black sea bass, summer flounder, scup, bluefish, you know, the whole enchilada. And the last thing for recreational fishing was potential for Atlantic bonito and false albacore regulations. So I think that kind of gets everyone up to speed on, you know, what happened and why we were there. And do you want me to just go straight into the meeting or? Okay. Cody's nodding his head, but he's on mute. So we'll go.
I figured I'd spare them. I already yapped for a couple minutes. I'd let you ride. But yeah, no, let's jump right in it. This would be a short, you know, we're trying to make some of these, Tony, in full transparency, a little bit punchier, right? So we'll have our 2-hour discussions and our recaps and some incredible guests, but also just give people some, you couldn't attend last night, but in 25, 30 minutes, here's what we got going. So yeah, let's jump right into it.
Yeah, for sure. So Massachusetts, you know, put those regulations in place. We requested that Rhode Island do the same. One of the big issues in Massachusetts was that people were cast netting all these tiny juvenile Atlantic bonito and using them for tuna bait. And, you know, I mean, they were like 10, 11 inches long. And, you know, I don't know, maybe catching them with hook and line and putting a couple in a live well, you know, that's not bad, but like cast netting 100 when they're in like a real thick school and like that, it's, I mean, you're just getting into like, what are you doing? Imagine if somebody did that with 12 inch stripers, just cast netted 100 of them and stuck them in a live well and you live lined them for tuna. Yeah, and it got really bad, really prevalent. And then the other thing was there's like a motorcycle gang of jet skiers who have no etiquette, which is pretty common for jet skiers, no etiquette, no consideration for any other fishermen on the water. And they run up, they kill every false albacore and bonito that they can. They have a cooler in the back of the boat. When the cooler's full, they run to a mothership. And it became pretty apparent early on that they were taking all these fish and selling them at various farmers markets on the black market under the table. No record, no nothing. And it got pretty bad last year and the year before. Pretty bad. Like, if this had happened where I'm from, there would have been a newspaper article. Yeah, it would have been a different outcome.
That's what they say in the South,
right?
Shit will get figured out. Dude. In the South, they just say shit will get figured out.
You heard me?
Yeah. Like, honestly, people are probably listening to this thinking, like, you're kidding me, right? Like black market bonito and albacore jet ski gang with mothership. But this, like, the first time we heard about that, Tony, maybe two seasons, it wasn't last season, maybe the season before, where, and it's like the people who are telling us are like a couple guides, we won't even name where, but just up in the Northeast, that like, they're like a no drama, old school, like, I guide my 300 days, I want to be left the F alone, I'm not doing social media, like, call me, book me, I take you fishing, and then let me go home and have a drink and make dinner. Like, these are cut and dry, no drama type people. And the people who were telling us this was happening, it was almost like, you got to be kidding me, right? So if anyone's like had on their fisheries bingo, had jet ski, black market, mothership, Albie operation, you can check that one off. It's probably next to your free space.
Yeah, I mean, it's wild. So, you know, if there's, here's the basic gist of it. If there's bad activity in two states that share a border and share a million fishing spots, you can bet your ass that if one state curtails it with regulations, then all of that activity is just going to shift over to the other state. We all know enforcement's a problem, and we all know, you know, that we all have to get along on the water. And yeah, I mean, there, we have to rein this in. So that was, I think, one of the motivating factors. And then, I mean, the other thing, we'll just get into it. You know, there were 800,000 directed trips just for false albacore. We're not even including bonito. And look, if you spend, you know, Ben Meadows, if he listens to this, is going to clutch his heart and pass out, because I'm going to do a little quick back of the napkin economics. But if you spend $100 a trip, which you're spending significantly more than that, $100 a trip.
That's gas to the ramp.
That's
gas
an $80 million economy.
Right.
Just $100.
Everything that goes into it. That's not just $100 on a new rod every time you're going, you know. That's just, honestly, a pack of hooks, a pack of insert your favorite hoagie, you know, soft baits, your swim baits or whatever, because you broke off a couple last time.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, let's say two or three boats or baits, pack of hooks, you know, some leader.
Well, forget about it if you're one of them fancy fly fishermen. Right. Yeah, I mean, exactly. Look, this is bare bones. I'm keeping it simple. 800,000 trips, $100 a trip, and you're at $80 million. So you show me any fishery that's worth $80 million that isn't regulated, and I'll wait. So,
and you're just talking about rec, right? Like, that's not even considering the guide fee, right? So some guy might be going, dude, I went fishing and I didn't spend I spent $4 on gas. That's all I had. You know, I went off the shore, whatever. Well, the person who launched at the ramp you were fishing next to spent, you know, $800 plus gas plus a hotel fee.
Well, so not only that, man. I mean, we know how passionate people are in North Carolina, the Northeast. People are
right, cuckoo
for this fish. So when they're around, people drive over a school of striped bass or bluefish, you know, to go catch one of these little speedsters. So, you know, you have this massive economy. You have all these other species on the decline. And, you know, here we are just trying to get some guardrail regulations in. So first of all, you know, first and foremost, there are really too many people to list on the podcast, but you know who you are. And our advocates came out in droves. We had stellar comments online. We had stellar comments in person. Each person did some heavy lifting and really brought more advocates to the table. And the comments were great. Some were simple, some were a little bit more complicated. But what it all came down to is whether you're a tackle shop owner, a lure manufacturer, a normal run-of-the-mill recreational angler, or a guide, with the decline of other species, these species are becoming so important. And we wanted the state to recognize it and see why, you know, that we need to put some kind of regulations in place. And I mean, let's face it, whether it's five fish or three fish, you take people out on, you know, you have a six pack license, you got six people out there. What exactly do you need 18 albies for, or 30 albies if it's five fish? And it kind of gets to the point where, you know, I saw, you ever see that video? It's a guy and he's holding like a little infant on the couch, and he's got like a little 2 or 3 year old daughter, and she comes in the room and she's got like a book and a stuffed animal, and you can tell she wants her dad to read her a story, and she sees the dad holding the other baby and she like clutches her heart and gasps. That was pretty much me. That was pretty much me this summer when we saw the party boats in New York advertising 1,000 bonito a day trip, be jigging in the wind farms.
It's also worth noting that is not another. So if you had 1,000 Benito trip on your bingo card next to Jet Ski Mafia Mothership, this is also not another exaggeration. There were literally boats posting like,
yeah, I mean, we have the receipts.
Another 500, another 700. Yeah.
No, we have the receipts.
700 yeah. fish.
No, they had pictures. And guess what? In the pictures, nobody was treating the fish right. They weren't bled.
Not to mention, again, for anyone who's ice. Anyone new to the operation, we're not anti-harvest. We like keeping fish. Bonito tastes great when they're fresh. It's not a freezer fish.
Oh no, yeah, no. This is not a recreational ban. You know, this is not a harvest ban.
That's not a freezer fish to begin with.
This is like, hey, Chucklehead, you don't have a right to go out and kill 1,000 of these things. Sorry, yeah. You know, like you don't get to do that.
Let's reference really quickly the wreck bag. The wreck bag limits that came out of MRIP that the state had in the presentation. I'm getting them up right now. So for Atlantic Bonito, when it came to like people, what they kept through 4,000 intercepts, so 4,000 polls of people, a vast, vast, vast majority, the scale of over 4,000 said on their trip, they didn't keep any. They just went fishing and caught them and released them. And then the scale of people who kept a couple was significantly lower. Now, this is just for those intercepts. I know some people catch them and fill out take home as many as they can, and that's fine. But the scale of, it was thousands to dozens for people who were just catching and releasing.
No, not dozens. It was over 4,000 to 1 for false albacore. And anything over 3 fish was like 4,000 to 10.
Oh, I'm looking at anything over 0 is what constitutes.
Oh, no,
dozens.
No.
That's 26.
Well, I'm like saying, look at the numbers on the left. Within the bag limits that we're suggesting, there were 10 people out of over 4,000 that would have gone over the bag limits that we were suggesting. And there were that was for Atlantic Bonito, and there were 0. For false albacore. So it's like, how do you want to manage this fishery? Do you want to manage? It's pretty clear. You know, you have the goose that laid the golden egg that can get your Rhode Island economy through these rough times. You have it. And don't wreck it. Like, are you really going to strangle the goose? Like, are you that dumb? So our guys did a great job. You know, fantastic job. And there weren't many dissenters, but there were a few. And, one of them in particular, well, they all had the same talking points, clearly prepared by somebody that we know. And if I keep hearing this in a very soon podcast, we're just going to name that individual and shine a light on the mold that he creates. Because that's the best disinfectant. So, but for right now, we'll just talk about the people that are in the meeting. And it was pretty funny because, the talking points were all the same. And it was, there's no science for these fish. There's no stock assessment. There's no, how can we put regulations on something that there's no science on? Well, I have two things to say. The first thing I have to say is, in the same meeting, there's proposal to significantly increase the creel limit for bluefish. So right now it's 3 and 5. Three for private rec angler, 5 for charter. And they're considering to changing that to 5 and 7. Even though the stock is not rebuilt, the projections show that you could do this increase and still rebuild the stock. But we kind of look at that and you're like, you're betting on a model that, all models have biases in them, all of them. And I don't know, I'm not seeing a ton of bluefish. Only place I heard that, you know, this year that the blue fishing was consistent and good was North Carolina. Everything else, it was sporadic. They were there, they were gone. They used to be here for 4 months. They were here for 3 weeks. So that was on the docket. There's a liberalization of the black sea bass limit, scupper not being liberalized. But you had, you know, this, the people who want to kill, you know, as much as possible, they were getting some wins for their, what, you know, what they want to do. And I mean, they just came in and raised Cain. That the science, you have no science, you have no science, you have no science. And the irony was not lost on me that if that bluefish model had come out and said, hey, it's 3 and 5 right now, but now we got to go to 2 and 4. You would have heard screaming from the parapets. Your science is terrible. You don't know what you're, you need to come out fishing with us. Your model's wrong. Because these are the people that the science is only good when it tells them what they want. So I think it's comical that they're saying that there's no science. Our rebuttal is pretty simple. A fishery science moves like molasses rolling uphill in January. And we don't have, with the decline of striped bass and the increase in effort on albies and bonito, and the motorcycle, the jet ski motorcycle gangs, and everything else, we don't have 5 years to come up with a coastwide stock assessment. That's number one. Number two, NOAA is right now, you know, recently has sent out several communications that because of budget constraints and people, you know, taking that early to retirement offer, that they may not be able to maintain their stock assessment schedule. So it's really disingenuous to say that you want a stock assessment when you know that's not even possible. It's even more disingenuous to say that the fish was never managed. It's pretty comical because it was managed. It was managed up until the reauthorization of Magnuson in 2006. And that's when we got things like, you know, accountability annual catch limits and payback clauses and things like that. And it took a little while to ramp up and to mainstream that. But when Magnuson was reauthorized with those details, some fish had to be dropped from management. Just like today, some fish, the stock assessments may not be on track. And albies and bonito were fish that were dropped from management. Was that a good idea? No. Were we killing it in 2006 and could have stopped it? No, we weren't. We were just getting, us older guys were just getting our legs under us in the fisheries world. So, you know, there's things that happen in the past that kind of dictate where we are today. And, you know, the people who are saying there's no science, again, if the science for bluefish or anything that you could liberalize the size and creel limit, if that had said you can't do that, it would have been the worst science ever. Black sea bass would have been eating all the lobsters. Bluefish would have been grabbing babies from strollers off the beaches and dragging them into the abyss. There's so many of them. You could walk across them. And anyone who disagreed, well, you know, they're not a real fisherman and they don't know what they're talking about. So I kind of expected, you know, to hear all of this. And, you know, we had our rebuttals, and the rebuttal is simple. Like Massachusetts, Rhode Island, you know, the rest of the New England states, they have a far greater list of fish that aren't around anymore than fish that are around. Bad management has absolutely decimated countless of those fisheries. I mean, look at cod. You know, look at Atlantic halibut. That was a real thing. Anyone know that they actually can grow bigger than Pacific halibut? Probably not, because they're just coming back now after a real long time and having not a single one around. How's that brown shrimp fishery doing in New England? Right. What brown shrimp fishery? And I don't know. I'm on a roll here, Cody, so I don't even know if I mentioned cod. But what a hot mess cod is. Whiting, catch
What's
many.
What's a cod?
Yeah, right.
I'm from New England. What is a cod?
Catch many whiting anymore? You know,
is that the thing that's the logo on Seafood Sam's and
how about
in downtown
how
Boston?
About winter flounder? Like, yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a couple places where winter flounder's fishing's nice, but I sure do miss catching them. So, in any event, you know, that with the history of just complete sheer destruction, never coming back, what they've done to fisheries, I just don't think that asking for just guardrail regulations, especially in light of a lack of science, I mean, we should be more precautionary. And so, you know, Cody, I sat there and I said to myself, self, it's 2026. We've been telling everyone that we're going to come out louder, stronger, you know, more forceful. We're running out of time. We got to make a change. And if anyone on this has ever heard, you know, the formal testimony from ASGA, it's very professional. It's very calm. We hit the points, you know, it's written, it's prepared, you know, everything's good. And I said to myself, okay, you know, I got a lot of people relying on me and we've had a million discussions about this. If any of these chuckleheads start coming directly after us, making false claims, saying bad things directed towards us, you know, really lowering the bar and being unprofessional, I'm going to slap the skin off their face. And that's exactly what I did, because we heard Rick Bellavance, who, you know, has never met a fish he doesn't like to kill, go on and say that we were special interest using our influence. There's no science. You know, that we just wanted to keep all the fish for ourselves and catch them the way that we wanted to catch them. And it's not fair. And he can't believe it and strongly opposes this. And it's just a bunch of, you know, it's just a bunch of people who don't represent the fish, and just on and on, and just, you know, really, really went from being like, hey, let's stick to the topics to, you know, let's sling some mud. And I hope I taught him a valuable lesson last night.
You know, one thing that I think I brought this up many, many moons ago, but the only place so far I think I've flown around, participated in testimony in some public process or whatever, from Maine to Mass, Rhode Island, North Carolina, Florida, Louisiana, and I'm probably forgetting one or two. But in all, at the state level, I'm talking, at the state level, the only place, ironically, that, you know, not hasn't always had the best success, but we're seeing, you know, mixed results in recently, some progress. But Louisiana, Tony, was the only place where if someone walked up to the mic and just started spewing lies, the commissioners would go, now stop right there, Tony. Is that true? And they'd tag in the scientists, and the scientists would be like, no, it's actually, you know, I'm making this shit up. Like, the escapement rate is actually 20% and it's going down more. So we're seeing that there's, you know, less and less small fish, right? And so they would say, like, the guy would be like, there's small fish everywhere. And they'd be like, hold on, is that true? And tap them, they'd be like, no, it's not true. And he'd be like, don't lie. You'd get put in your place. Some of these other states, you can get up there and be like, albies are pink and I see them everywhere, and you know, unicorns fart rainbows. And they're like, thank you so much for your testimony, Mr. Friedrich. Next, Mr. Rubner. Like, no, put, you just get to ramble for 2 minutes. They're not paying attention. And then they just go on the next one. So when you hear stuff like this, and I wasn't obviously in attendance for this one specifically, but you hear someone go on and start spewing some lies, it's really dangerous. Because depending on the order of operations, on when you raise your hand or whatever, there's some variables here. Maybe you don't speak after this person. So you say a bunch of good, you know, science and perspectives on how to be conservation minded, and you bring a really polite, you know, stable comment that's related to X, Y, and Z. And then they get on and bullshit. And if there's only one or two people on after who don't have a rebuttal or answers to those, they get the final word with just junk. So it's. I just wanted to point that out because it was interesting that Louisiana so far, at least in my, let's say the last 5 years, is the only place that I've really seen challenge someone who's making a profound statement. But yeah. If someone went up and said, like, redfish are fine and don't need regs, they, you know, they let people make that statement. That was their opinion. But if you went up and said, like, and this person's doing this, and this person personally benefits from this, and I, you know, this data is wrong, they'd say, no. Like, we're going to fact check this. So, like, the fact check in sight is kind of crazy. And I wish we saw a little bit of more of that, and not in the sense of auditing people's public comments. If someone wholeheartedly disagrees with us, make your case, and that's why. And that's fine. But there needs to be a little bit of, like, to just jump on and say some of the stuff that, whether you already said on this podcast or told me earlier, that certain individuals are saying, like, you just shouldn't be able to. If you go back, we've done almost 200 podcasts, and let's just call them all a half hour, which is probably a low average. There is 100 consecutive hours of someone related to our association talking about how we view fisheries. You can love us, you can hate us, you can say F us. I don't care about any of the above. Love us or hate us. The one thing you can't say is that our opinion has changed, that our perspective and our approach to things has changed. We might view, all right, we're more focused on this now as certain data has changed or the fishery's starting to rebound. So maybe we believe in, you know, this is a great next step. Not saying there's been some evolution, but the core tenets of who we are and what we believe has not changed once. In all the years we've been talking about this stuff, these people just will say anything in that moment just to get out of that moment, right? If I can just delay action now, if I can just shut this down right now, that's all that matters. And so, like, put their record on tape over the last 5 years and let's see what their opinion has to say. And sorry, I a little bit of a defensive rip, but it's just, it's disgusting because the person who speaks before that might be a young recreational angler who's getting the courage to do this for the first time and they've been looking into the data. Maybe they don't even follow ASGA. They've just been, you know, they want to participate in their own capacity, or, you know, an established guide who's a father of two who just wants to make sure there's fish for the next generation. And then this person just hops in and just bullshits until they get caught off. And it can be pretty infuriating.
Well, you know, I would just say this, like, we have watched one fishery after another get decimated, and this is our line in the sand. And this, it makes no sense to not have regulations on these fish. One is a $80 million minimum fishery, and to not have any regulations is probably the dumbest thing I could ever possibly imagine. We are not going to let this happen to this fishery. We're just not going to. And here's another little tidbit, Cody. And I'm not being critical. I just want everyone to understand these stock assessments, okay? We were contacted by the people who do the stock assessment for bluefish. And God love them, they were desperate for more data. And we were told that if we could accumulate data on released fish, released lengths of fish from North Carolina to Florida, in a year, it would vastly improve the stock assessment for bluefish. Does anyone want to guess how many fish we had to record that were released and what their length was? If anyone's listening, think in your head and just have a number in your head. And I'll show you how. The stock assessments, we needed to get 20 release lengths in a year from North Carolina to Florida. We got 800. But that, if you put the science that we have with the Atlantic Bonito and the Albies that we have collected on Got One, with the telemetry studies, with the Floy tagging, with everything that we've done, with the otolith work that has been done with Walt Gallet's lab up in Maine, with genetics work that's been done by our friends, by friends when we first got started, you know, it's probably better data than bluefish. So, like, please don't tell me there's no science. I know there is, because our community paid for it. A lot of money. We paid for it. We have catch. We have a paper on catch and release coming out. We have that's it's been peer reviewed and it's just waiting to be published right now. We're gonna have a paper on the movements of these fish. We're gonna have so much stuff on it. It's unbelievable. So it's just it's not an argument that I'm willing to listen to, and I don't care if you need to catch 1,000 bonito. You need to kill that many in a day to keep your business going. I hope your business goes under because you don't get to destroy. One person cannot destroy everything for everyone else. Those days are over. And I want to be real clear, like some of the comments from the few guys from the commercial sector in Rhode Island, I would just say that there are a lot of problems with accountability in the commercial sector. I know this from private conversations that I have, and I'm not willing to go full bore right now, but our listeners will be made aware of serious issues that exist in Rhode Island. And I think one of the craziest comments that I heard was, yeah, do this for recreational, but don't do anything for commercial. We don't want a cap. What if we have a emerging fishery that we want to exploit years from now? That is the exact reason why we're doing this. Because if things keep going this way, there will be an emerging fishery. One of the comments was, well, what if we start gill netting them or trawling them? We want to be able to do that. So for everyone who thought we were idiots on getting regulations in for bonito and albies, there were comments last night that said, well, what if I want to open up a trawl fishery for them? And what if I want to open up a gillnet fishery for them? And I want you to think about that. That's what we are fighting against. Trust us a little bit when we come out with a research project, because we know more than you. And we see the writing on the wall.
You almost can't, you can't thank them enough for being willing to say it, because they're proving precautionary management and our perspective on where we should go with this. Like, hey, let's just establish these rules. The same way in North Carolina, right? We were like, the precautionary management regs that went on with North Carolina was like, basically, hey, if anything goes massive, like if this fishery doubles, triples year over year, and all of a sudden is this massive thing, these are the guardrails that would go in that were including, like, I think, what was it, like 3,500 pounds per day or something. So the precautionary regs that were going in were basically set to establish some sort of law and order to make sure this massive boom of industrial harvest didn't start. But it's even those ones protected, like, artisanal, smaller scale commercial. Like, you know, hook and line, you used to go out and get 1,000 pounds a day, 2,000 pounds a day, sell them in a local market, whatever. So that was still protected under those precautionary regs. And those people still fought back there, Tony, and said, oh, that's way, what if my business wants to take off? So you bring a conversation like this up north and you say, we probably should just slow down. You know, we should probably take a step, say, hey, this is a good thing that we have. Other things are struggling, and let's make sure it doesn't go crazy. And they tell you, we don't need regulations because that's not going to happen. And then how do they respond in their comment? Well, what the hell am I supposed to do if I want to make this go crazy and make a bunch of money off it and turn it into my full-time exploitation in a year or two from now? And you're like, did they just say the quiet thing out loud? Like that, it's like when they say the title of the movie in the movie, right? You know, da-da-da-da-da, and this is Roadhouse. And you go, hey, he said it. He said it right there. And so it's the same thing where all of a sudden you're like, did he just say he wants to start a longline fishery for it next year? Isn't that kind of the whole reason we're having this conversation? You kind of want to thank him for having the
Cody. I want people to understand like where we're coming from. We're fighting for you. We want you to still fish, and we have no problem, you know, mounting a serious offense to get these regulations in place. And fighting back. But, you know, it comes down to this. There's nothing that any fisheries manager in the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast should be proud of. Saltwater. Nothing. In the past few years. You have pushed us to the brink. You your risk policy sucks. As soon as somebody yells at you, you buckle like a $10 sofa. And, you know, if you don't have the courage to do the right thing and you're just really great at math, leave your job. Because we're going to force you to do the right thing. And if you don't like the, you know, people, you know, causing you problems and yelling at you and, you know, all the stuff that the other side does, message received. We will make your life 10 times more difficult than they did. And all we're asking you to do is to do the right thing. But if I have a choice between losing an issue or fighting the same way that the people are winning or fighting, I will fight the same way that the people who we are against and may potentially win this. So you just stepped in it. And I would say, eat your Wheaties, grow a pair, and have some courage. Because we're going to make you have courage. And hopefully in the end, you'll thank me. You know, you need this lesson in life. You can't just bow to whoever yells the loudest. And that is basically what fisheries has been for decades. You know, we have laid a path a mile wide to give you the political cover to do the right thing, and you still don't do it. You're still just broken, and you don't do it. We're going to make you do it. And, you know, if you're going to come on the mic and instead of addressing the issue, just take cheap shots at us during your testimony, well, I hope you're ready. I hope you're ready for that too, because we will eviscerate you and make you look like a fool, and we will take the day, and that'll be your legacy. So, you know, you get with us, you get what you give. We have two different testimonies that we will say. One is above board, scientific, professional, everything that you would want. I'd walk into the halls of Congress and read it in front of a committee. The other one is going to drag you through the mud, show the world what you are, show the world why we need these regulations, and we're not going to take any prisoners. So what you hear is a direct reflection of what you said, and I believe that's called accountability. And we're going to deliver it. So, you know, I could not be more proud of our community coming up there and saying the right thing. They absolutely took the day, but we have a lot more ahead of us. Right now, that was just a workshop. That is going to begat a public comment process where there's going to be different options for management. And we're going to have an opportunity to comment. And that is where we're going to need everybody times 10 again. Just completely overwhelming. Make sure that these regulations go in place. And we are going to replicate this down the coast. If I had to guess, I would say as our community grows, gains momentum, gets stronger, you're probably going to see half a dozen states adopting good regulations on false albacore and Atlantic bonito by the end of the year. And we are going to grind. We're not going to stop. These fish are awesome. If somebody thinks they're trash, that's on you. I'm glad you're so awesome that you can go out and pick and choose what you're going to catch, and the fish that you catch are so much better. But I've never not seen someone smile when they hook an albie or a bonito, you know, and not everyone can afford a boat that can go offshore and chase the big pelagics. So this is every person's fish. You can catch this fish from the beach. You can catch it very near shore. And it's kind of like a taste of what that deep blue ocean is like, you know, on a smaller scale. And I think it really gets people into the sport, which we desperately need. There's a vast difference between catching a, 8-pound Albie and a 10-pound striper. It is a huge difference. And it is exciting. And I think kids deserve that. And just to say, you know, well, we may have a good run and I may want to catch 1,000 of them, kill 1,000 of them in a day. I don't care. I don't care. I don't care if you want to catch 1,000 of them. I want people to keep catching them and respect things. And I just don't know how a boat could take in 100 or 1,000 bonito and have any respect for the resource. The truth is, you're teaching people the wrong thing. You're not a good steward of the resource. The only thing that you care about is your business model. You don't care about 10 or 20 years from now. And we do. And these are the basic differences at the core of who we are versus who they are. And we will fight. We are right. And, you know, let's face it, long term, they're going to lose. They are old. They're boomers, mostly. And they're not going to be around much longer. And we are. We're the future. I know that must be a bitter pill to swallow. But a lot more young people think the way that we do versus think the way that you do. And you need to see the writing on the wall. And you have a choice. We can all get along, be courteous and professional to each other, or you can continue to take pot shots and learn brutal, horrible lessons that we have more people, our people are better speakers, our people are better prepared, we do more work, we do more outreach, we're bigger than you are, and we're going to keep grinding, and we're never going to stop. And again, you could be polite and professional, and maybe we could actually have adult discussions and figure this stuff out. Or you can continue to be, you know, the equivalent of the guy who drinks Dewars and water at a bar and turns into a real jackass after, you know, by 2 o'clock when he should be going back to work, and all the bartenders are just rolling their eyes and like, God, get this guy out of the room. You can be the fisheries equivalent of that or not. It's up to you.
You see me chuckling on mute, and it's like, it's kind of funny because it's like, you know, your little spiel right there is like this very combative, you know, tone and aggressive tone. But the message that you're relaying is like, we're going to continue to try to keep doing good by the natural world and the next generation. It's like, I don't know. It's just a funny dichotomy of like a threat, like, we are going to keep trying to do right. And if you keep sucking, we're going to try to do more right. It's like, it shouldn't have to be said in such a combative tone. But that's why, if you saw me chuckling while I was listening, it was not that I did not agree, but it just almost feels like a weird simulation that we're in, that like you even have to pretend. But hey, listen, we're at 45 minutes. I think that was a breakdown of what the hell happened.
Yeah, Cody, and like super proud. Why don't you just hit? Super proud of everyone. As soon as the public comment period opens and we get more details on that, the world will know, and we will push this out.
That was
going to
be my last thing. Yeah. Is where this is going. It's just, there's going to be another round of this, and it's probably going to be in anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks, right? Is what I.
Yeah. It's like a, you know, 30-day period somewhere in February, and, you know, here we go. And the only other thing that I kind of wanted to just tick the box on is we're going to have Menhaden comments for the Gulf and those buffer zones and all that kind of stuff. That's, I believe, the 23rd at 3 p.m. is the deadline for that. So we will...
Separate podcast. We have the episode already in the hopper.
Yeah. Episodes in the hopper. We will, you know, check us out on social media, the podcast, whatever. And you will have information on that as well.
Cheers, y'all. Much love to everyone who showed out. Like Tony said, we could go name by name, and maybe we should here in upcoming podcasts. But for now, everyone who is involved. We appreciate y'all, and this is just a start, and we'll get some more coverage on this. We'll have some guests come in from those who participated, maybe explain their comments on why they did, but that was just a little rapid reaction of the Albi and Benito debacle in Rhode Island on January 12th. So more to come. Menhaden, Sea Trout, Benito, False Albacore, Snook, Redfish in the Atlantic and in the Gulf, Jack Crevalle, Striped Bass, you name it. We're working on it all. Much love. Here we go. Giddy up. We're just getting started.